Chat Room is the program which is devoted to the largest segment of society, to those who are coming to realize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, military, and media institutions are corrupt, even counterproductive. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us over the next 2 hours, 877-376-45. We're going to begin with two items very close to home in the domestic news, even though the Islamic State really is dominating headlines around the country. And then we're going to transition in our second hour to the 23rd Psalm to expose two things. One is just how corrupt English Bible translations have become. And second, to reveal testimony that is profoundly important for you to know in terms of establishing a relationship with Yahweh, God's one and only name. Scott, why don't we begin with you? You shared with me at the conclusion of our program yesterday the decisions of the Ohio Justice Department regarding the murder of Tamir Rice. Now, for those who may not recall, Tamir Rice was a young man, I think pre-teens, like 12 years old, something in that range, who was playing with a toy gun, something that I did routinely in my youth. I had lots of cap pistols. In fact, my play guns looked more real than did the Tamir Rice's. They were bright, shiny chrome with plastic handles that were made to look like the pearl handles on revolvers in the Old West, and they were noisier. They fired caps that made the same kind of spark, sound, and smoke that you would expect in a real firearm. I mean, they looked real. They were designed to look real. And I routinely played with my cap guns. Well, that's what Tamir Rice was doing, was playing with a pretend gun, and he was nearly run over by police in a play yard where no one was paying him any attention, where he was not accosting or threatening anybody, wasn't shouting at anybody, wasn't belligerent, wasn't pointing his gun at anybody. He, kid, was just playing with his, his imaginary...
playing with his toy gun.
Cops and robbers, who knows what. Yeah. And these police at high speed came right up, drove right up into the grass of the play yard, about 15 feet from the young boy. Didn't stop to talk to him, didn't stop to ask him to set the toy gun down. But within a second of the time that they had screeched to a halt, Tamir Rice was dead.
Well, you're shot.
So what did the Ohio Justice Department have to say about those actions?
Well, the other day when I told you, it was I reported that the police wanted to, they were going to charge Tamir Rice with inducing panic and aggravated menacing. And
what were the two charges again?
Aggravated menacing and inducing panic.
Okay, aggravated menacing. Okay, for those who have not done so. There were two videos circulated on Tamir Rice. One of the videos shows Tamir Rice coming in and out of screen with his toy gun, kind of very slowly walking back and forth, guns mostly down at his side. He's just like most kids about that age. He's just preoccupied with everything that's going on around him, and it shows, occasionally a person will walk into the scene and sit on the gazebo, but no one's paying him any attention. He's not paying anybody attention. He's just meandering about very quietly. Is there any way in that 20 minutes of Tamir Rice before he was killed, that video that was shot, is there any way to say that he was aggravated or menacing in any way?
No. No, and I've seen the full 10-minute-long video of him playing around in the park. And at one point, there's a person sitting, remember in the video that I showed you where there's that gazebo there?
Mm-hmm.
The park pavilion or whatever. There's somebody sitting in there, and they see him playing, and they seem unconcerned by it.
Yeah.
Even in the report, the police call to the police, it was... it was reported that responding to a call about a gun that is probably fake. So even the person that called it in said, hey, I think this gun is fake. I'm not sure, though.
Come and check it out. Just come and check it out.
Just come and check it out.
You know, come and ask the verify that it's fake. You know, talk to the young boy. That's all that was being requested. And yet, Tamir Rice is dead, and the Justice Department in Ohio thinks that Tamir Rice should be charged in his own murder.
Well, no, they were going to charge him, but since he's dead, they're not going to.
But they would have. It was their judgment that he should be charged in his own murder, and they decided, well, maybe since he's already dead, why bother?
Yeah, and it's just amazing to me. And this, again, this is still something that, like, this is one of those cases. You know, I think the Garner death in New York, this one, these are the ones that people should be pointing to.
The one that the verdict was announced over this weekend, where two cops, and we have Roy on the line, so I want to go to Roy here as quickly as possible, because Roy is calling in from Australia, which is the middle of the night. And on a topic that's actually related to all of this, the one that was renounced over the weekend where a cop who, after a high-speed chase after an African-American couple, a man and a woman, who had done nothing wrong, jumps on the hood of their car and unloads his revolver into their bodies, killing both of them amongst a cascade of 1,000 rounds being fired by other police officers at the scene into this car where these two people had done nothing wrong. And that police officer was found not guilty. Roy, we live in pretty troubling and menacing times where we are victimized by the authorities who have stunning control over our lives. Isn't that your conclusion?
I agree more. And I was ringing in actually in relation to the discussion we had earlier on the war on cash in gold.
Yes, yes.
If you wish to continue with what you're saying, that's fine.
Yes. Well, they're really not a lot. They're related in a way, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, well, what I think is happening is we're seeing prophecy come alive before our very eyes.
Right.
And it's only 11 years to the tribulation, so we should expect to see the increasing birth pains that Yahusha's talking
about. Yes.
I don't care, we do.
Yeah, I mean, today the Department of Justice, which is the one that came up with this stupid, I mean, unbelievably immoral, uncivilized rendering on the young boy that was murdered by the cops, exonerating the cops and blaming the young boy for his death. That's the same Justice Department that is using all manner of electronic surveillance and specifically our use of electronic credit to monitor our every move.
That's exactly right. Yes, we can't... The war on cash, criminalizing cash, and, of course, eventually gold, is something that these governments are going to have to do.
Right.
And part of that, and with that comes the need to control people.
Right.
They can't do it without control. I've written a little bit of a blurb about Isaiah 18, if I may read that.
Yeah, and let me just preface it by saying that. It is what Roy is going to talk about is one of the ways that government is seeking to control individuals and ultimately has complete control over them. And these are governments whose actions dictate that they ought not be trusted, and that I think that what we witnessed here with the police going berserk in both of these cases, that the police are simply the means to enforce the government's ironclad control over your finances.
Correct. And the army, too. Don't forget the army.
Right. Yeah, both domestic and internationally. So that's the blunt force that enables them to impose these draconian controls over individuals. So with that said, that's why I think these things are related. I don't think they're in any way disassociated. Same subject.
In Isaiah 18, I think that it's really coming to pass as we speak.
Right.
The USA is falling apart before our eyes. It is.
Yes.
In states such as Illinois and California are bankrupt, and probably
yes.
in other states and municipalities as well.
Yes.
Rapidly increasing fees and charges everywhere. I think there's a 25% increase in all property charges in Denver. I've got that right.
Yes.
The U.S. has an openly criminal government, ignores its own constitution, kills its
yes.
whim of a corrupt police force, steals
yes.
its wealth and impoverishes future generations,
yes.
wages war without cause and kills millions worthwhile worldwide doing so.
Yes. Well, I tell you what, when you read that list, which is inarguable.
It has a
that's, I mean, that is really a list that would earn any moral person's condemnation. And yet you're describing to a T the United States as it sits today.
Well, that's true, but unfortunately it's not confined to the United States.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I mean, you could sort of come running away from the U.S., and in fact, maybe you should, come down to New Zealand. Not that I'm in New Zealand, but it's a lovely place and a good place to run to if you had to.
Yes.
I think Yah will protect us all anyway.
Yes. That's why I think that running away, that walking away from one's country has nothing to do with location. It has all to do with attitude and perspective.
Yeah, true. Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the U.S. judiciary is corrupt. It's got a
yes.
department that is just us, working only for the fascist 1%. But a Congress that's equally corrupt and the population is too ignorant or itself corrupt to do anything about it. They go along to get along, I think.
Nearly yes.
Media, commerce, and academia are lies and corruption, and the very words of the language of the country are turned on their heads to confuse and mislead. War is peace, warming is cooling, handouts become unearned tax credits, equality means inequality, social justice means socialism, and so on. And so there's even increasing talk of secession. You know, I think, for example, Texas, which just happens to be the focus of Jade Helm, itself a prelude to an overt takeover by the oligarch, east of Isaiah 18. So I think that pretty well sums up what's going on over in the U.S.
Yeah, the difference between you and me is you are precise, you are concise. As a matter of fact, that next segment, I think we'd all benefit from you reading through that again, because it is such a precise, concise, appropriate depiction of where we find ourselves. We need to know who we are, what we become. Boy, this morning, I had a rare argument with my wife. It occurred because there was a person on the network television, network news, national network news, Today program, that is a Medal of Honor recipient in Vietnam, and he was standing, because this is Memorial Day in the United States, and he was standing in front of the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, but spoke of the Vietnam Memorial. He says, you know, there's the names of 57,000-some-odd Americans here who gave the ultimate sacrifice so that the rest of America could celebrate this day. And I just yelled at the screen. I said, no, you idiot. And as a matter of fact, it's amazing that no one ever questions you when you make such a stupid statement. There is nothing anyone sacrificed in Vietnam that changed American liberty one iota. It robs some Americans of their finances. It robs some Americans of their sons and daughters, of their fathers and mothers. But it accomplished absolutely nothing in terms of a benefit for America and its freedoms. And I yelled at the television. I said, no, you idiot, that's not true. My wife said, why are you so angry?
Now, that sounds familiar because that's just what I do, and my wife gets really upset when I do.
Yeah.
So I try not
to. And then as I tried to explain to her, I said, you ought to care. I mean, this kind of propaganda robs us of our ability to make intelligent decisions as a community. It's why we continue to flounder. It's why we're now at war with the Islamic State and making a bad situation worse. You know, it's this attitude that enabled Americans to support the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, if you don't get mad at this kind of stuff, we'll continue to escalate the wars and make bad situations worse. You ought to care.
Yeah, but the usual response to that is, what can I do about it? And I say, well, you may not be able to do anything about it, but you can open your mouth and speak to other people and tell them the truth.
Correct.
Unfortunately, that doesn't go down well.
Right. I said, because when you clear away these myths, when you open your mouth and you clear away these myths, when you do what you do, what I'm doing, then at least you put people in a position where they're, for the first time, open to the truth.
Yeah. By the way, I should have said, happy Shavua. I missed it.
Yes, happy Shavua. This is Yahweh's day to encourage people to share his testimony. Shavua, as you know, is a combination, really, of two things. It's not just sharing what we know about his family and the path that he has provided home, but also to issue a warning to those on the wrong path. You know, what my wife got mad at me for doing today is an essential part of Shavua.
Mm.
You know, because of Shavua, we are enriched and empowered with the teaching of Yahweh so that we are prepared to tell people the truth, to expose them to the truth. I mean, I know that Teruah is where we tell them and expose them to the truth, but Shavua is the place where we're enriched and empowered and enabled to do so.
Correct. Yes, that's right. If I may, can
sure,
I go through some relevant passages that I think were important with regard to the war on cash and the things that come from that.
You're right. Mm-hmm.
Revelations 13:11. 16-17, 17:1-2, Daniel 7:25, and Matthew 24, and we've been through Isaiah 18 already.
Yeah, do you have any of those handy where you could actually share them? Because most people are not
just
positioned to write them down or read them independently.
No, I'll just summarize it. In Revelation 13:11, the false prophet is revealed as a Jew. He comes from the land and, like the anti-Messiah, must be alive now, which is an interesting thought.
Yes. Now, the false prophet is different than the Torahless one. The false prophet is a religious leader. He will absolutely be a Jew. He comes from the land. And he is going to work in harmony with the Torahless one to control people and mislead them and to encourage them to accept lies.
Great. Revelation 13:16-17, everyone must have the mark of the beast or his number to buy and sell. That is to stay alive. That's just a summary of it, of course. Revelation 17:1 describes the whore of Babylon sitting on many waters or seas. If you like. That's obviously a metaphor for the whole world.
Yeah, the seas are a metaphor for the world. Whore of Babylon is a metaphor for Satan's influence through human institutions. Babylon is from the Hebrew Babel, which means to corrupt, to confuse. And Babylon throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms is degraded, exposed and condemned by Yahweh as the institution of religion, institution of politics, militarism, economic schemes. So it is used as a metaphor to expose and condemn confusing religious, political, military schemes. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Roy, you just read the statement that so many Christians constantly state without thinking. They talk about the mark of the beast and it being required to be able to buy or sell, to engage in commerce, which is why you quoted it, because it, of course, speaks of the control that's going to be imposed on people. Yosha spoke Hebrew, not Greek. But the Greek word would indicate what he was trying to at least to convey in Hebrew. You probably know that Mark was stigma, which is from the Greek stizo. What the word actually means is to stick, to prick. And it's a stick or a prick, a goad from a sharp pointed object for the purpose of others being able to recognize who owns the individual at the other end of that stick, prick, or goad. That's a really loaded word when you understand the context of Paul admitting that the goad and the stick, the point in his side, was a demon from Satan. When Yosha speaks of the stinger or prick or goad of Satan and its menacing effect on individuals, and identified, associated Satan with this prick or goat. And when you realize that a stigma is essentially a brand, it tells you who you're owned by. So if you've got the mark, you're designating that you're owned by Satan based on stigma. But, you know, Roy, it even gets worse. You mentioned Daniel and Revelation, so I'm sure you know that when Yahweh used the Yosha here, used the term beast, he was referring to the beasts in Revelation, which is the last day beast in Revelation is that which grows out of the Roman Empire, which is there's only one thing that's grown out of the Roman Empire that is still pervasive today. It's Roman Catholic Church and Christianity. I mean, these are stunning implications.
Mm. Well, Mark, can I just read out what I've suggested?
Please.
It can be a physical mark, such as an RFID chip or barcode. There's your prick for you. And or a simple mark.
The forehead. That's how you put it in, would be with a prick, with a needle, right?
Yeah. And that's right. The right hand, how we work. But into this one, it can be a religious mark. At the end, two satanic religions, that is Islam and Christianity, will be joined at the hip, but the union will be weak and full of friction, hence the 10 toes of Daniel. Muslims who pray 5 times a day have a mark on their forehead from rubbing it in the dirt, and I've seen that in quite a few patients that Muslims that I've treated. Christians use the sign of the cross with the right hand, and you look for that, just check out a Catholic website. Yes. In Hebrew, spelled Tav Resh Shin Wah, adds to 666. The Arabic for Allah uses Wah Shin Shin 3 times to get 666. And Allah in Hebrew is Aleph Lamed Lamed Hay, which sums to 66, putting it all together, a man, number 6.
Wow.
Paul and his religion, Christianity, combined with Islam, will be the beast, and his mark will simply be the Arabic for Allah. His name and his number are identical. Worse, Allah is Satan, so those with the mark will carry Satan's brand, just as you said.
Oh, okay, I've got to stop you. I've got to stop you, right? Your ability to successfully cover profound information in a de minimis number of words continues to astound me.
Okay.
I need you to do two things. One is I need you to please email what you just read, so that I can share it with our listeners, because everyone that's listening to this program is going to ask me for it. And second, could you just go back through what you just read to us? Because it's got me with goosebumps here. Please, could you please go back through what you just read?
The whole thing or just the religious mark?
The religious mark and how it relates to 666.
Okay. A religious mark at the end. At the end of, the end times now, the two satanic religions, Islam and Christianity, will be joined at the hip, but the union will be weak and full of friction, and hence the 10 toes from Daniel. Muslims who pray 5 times a day have a mark on their forehead from rubbing it in the dirt. I mean, you can see that in Muslims yourself if you look at them.
Yes.
Devout Muslims. Christians use the sign of the cross with the right hand. So that's just check out a Catholic website. I've got one here if you want these. Tarsus in Hebrew, Tav Resh Shin Wah, adds to 666. The Arabic for Allah uses Wah Shin Shin 3 times to get 666. And Allah in Hebrew is Aleph Lamed Lamed Hay, which sums to 66. Putting it all together, a man, that is a number 6, or Paul, and his religion, Christianity combined with Islam, will be the beast, and his mark may simply be the Arabic for Allah. His name and his number are identical. So, in other words, you will be carrying a symbol for Allah, either on your forehead or on your hand. Probably more likely on your hand, I would think.
Do you know? Let me just interrupt you here 1 second. You know, one of the things that I enjoy reading is copies of the oldest manuscripts, whether they be in Hebrew, mostly in Hebrew, but occasionally in Greek. And the one extant Greek manuscript before the rise of the Roman-imposed religion of Christianity, before Constantine, shows the 666 written in such a way that it looks like the Arabic. It looks almost identical to Arabic for "in the name of Allah."
Yeah.
Now, the letters that are described here and the way they're written designate, because numbers were written with letters with a line over them to designate that these letters aren't forming a word, but instead of a number. And so you can read 666 out of those three letters, but you can also read "in the name of Allah," designating the way that sign is mark is going to be written, with Allah's name in Arabic, by the way, while it is in Arabic, and Yahweh doesn't give two hoots about Arabic, the Arabic alphabet, and it's the order and the, therefore, the numbers of the letters in Arabic are all Hebrew. Allah is actually a Hebrew name. Everything in the Quran is actually written in Hebrew. And so, well, I would never give a number ranking to letters in an alphabet other than Hebrew. Arabic, my friends, is Hebrew.
Hmm. You know, this stuff's really available all over the net. There's nothing sort of that, new that I've brought up. This is just simply a sort of collation of the whole lot.
What is the difference between knowing and understanding, my friend?
Well, you could know a lot of stuff, but then unless you know what how it connects together and what it finally means, you don't have understanding.
So all of this stuff is known around the net. The difference between what you have done here, though, is you've made the connections. You've brought these things together that provide understanding.
Okay. Well, later on, if we've got time, may I jump to another interesting subject that actually follows on from what Kirk was saying.
Yes.
Concerning Yah and the family members going on trips of exploration.
And yes.
I think I've extended that. I don't know whether you've seen my emails on it, but I've extended that, and I think I've come up with a little formula, if you like, for the characteristics of the people who are in the covenant.
Yes, absolutely.
Might be. In fact, I could even run through that quickly now.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I just said, so why won't people listen to Yah's offer and accept it? Why the one in a million? To be a member of the covenant, I think you would have to have at least these criteria. The first one would be an inquiring mind. That comes with the neshama.
Right.
You'd have to enjoy discovery. Again, the neshama. Be creative and imaginative. Again, the neshama. And the four, be born in the right location, thus enabling access to Yah's word. In other words, this is going to be partly genetic, if you like, as well as geographic.
Mm-hmm.
Have an upbringing that fosters an inquiring mind together with appropriate education,
mm-hmm.
includes access to the Torah. I mean, that, again, is genetic, and it's also,
mm-hmm.
I suppose, to some extent, geographical.
Mm-hmm.
Have experiences in life that lead to Yah, and eventually leading to the help of the Spirit to become Torah observant. So
mm-hmm.
I think that all of these seven criteria... Everyone in the covenant will have that. Perhaps even some more. I mean, you can come up with some more.
Yeah, can I interrupt you here? Some people might be objecting to the fact that your genetics, whom you were born to, where you were born, and to whom you were born, having an influence as to whether or not you can or will develop an aptitude for what Yah has to say, or we won't have access to what Yah has to say. And you might think that that's unfair, but I don't. It is the reason why in families, Yahweh tells us that our most important job is to share His Torah with our children. It's why parents circumcise their sons so that they remember and so that we remember. It's our principal responsibility to raise our children so that they know Yahweh. And that's why Yahweh etched in stone that fathers corrupt their children to the third and fourth generation.
Now, people like, an Arab in Arabia.
Right. No chance. No chance. You are right, and I think it needs to be discussed, and I think it's important that people know that.
Yeah. Well, I was bequeathed, I think, an inquiring mind by my father at any rate,
mm-hmm.
by both parents, because my father was very intelligent, and he
mm-hmm.
He was both a mechanical and electrical engineer, and he taught me a lot of things. But he also, there's something that happens to you, I think, that when you're very young, I think that, I don't know what it is, but Yah must see something in you.
Mm-hmm.
And will be an encapsulation of all of these things. You don't have an inspiring mind, for example. Well, he's not going to be interested in you because you're not going to inspire about him.
Right.
You don't enjoy discovery, as you've said, and I love discovery.
Right.
I love discovering things that are new and trying to find things out myself that are new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something really exciting and fulfilling about doing that, enjoying that sort of thing. Again, most people don't seem to want to do it. I've never been able to figure out why. But I think if you put it together with those at least seven criteria, that's probably the reason why only one in a million is going to accept it anyway.
Yes.
That is to become a member of the covenant.
Yes. And I think Yahweh does see something in certain individuals that he thinks will make eternity more enjoyable for himself and for all of us.
Yeah. There is one thing I must differ with you about, though, and that is the idea that Yah will see something in us and save you, for example, if you're in a situation where you're going to be killed, and saves you because he knows that you're going to join the covenant. But, of course, he can only know that because he saved you. So what is happening is that he sees something in you that says you may join the covenant, hence I'm going to save you, but on the other hand, because you have free will, you may not. Then he loses out, if you like.
Right.
So, but these people, you just don't know. I mean, your example of the upside down aircraft, for example, he may have seen in you something that would say, okay, he's going to join the covenant, so I'm going to save him, and he does, and you join the covenant, so we hear about you. But what if you'd said later on, even after you'd been saved from the aircraft crash, and said, no, I'm not going to join the covenant, you're not heard of again.
Right.
So I think that's probably a better explanation, if I can be so bold, as that better explanation than just asserting that he sees someone and rescues them and they automatically join the covenant.
Yeah, I never wanted to imply that by the act of saving that we automatically join the covenant. The only difference between what you have said and what I intended to convey anyway is that while we still maintain free will, Yahweh can both see in us something that he enjoys, that he thinks will be beneficial, and also since he can see the future, he can see what we end up doing with whatever it is that that he found interesting in us relative to his covenant. And I'm not sure, so I wouldn't differ with you at all in terms of your assessment that we still have free will, and we could still, after being saved physically from a mortal accident, choose not to participate in the covenant. I would agree with that. We still have free will. We still have that choice. And it's true that if we make that choice, Yahweh would never hear from us again, and we would never hear from him, and no one would hear from us either on these topics. So it's all true. But I do think Yahweh does occasionally reach out to those that he has an interest in knowing. And while it does not make us join the covenant, doesn't force us to join the covenant, doesn't even compel us to join the covenant, it at least provides an introduction that if you have an inquiring mind, you're open, you like discovery, you know, it's to start you off, if you will, and in the right way.
That's right. And the interesting thing is that Yah, unlike Newton's idea of a mechanical universe in which everything is predetermined, in other words, A connects to B to C and to D and so forth, so that when you do something, it's going to have consequences right down the track.
Correct.
Yah, in fact, designed the universe quantum mechanically.
Mm-hmm.
It is, in fact, indeterminate. So even he could not determine the end from the beginning. He can, of course, time travel and see what happened.
Mm-hmm.
He chose not to, and hence to, if you like, have a voyage of discovery with all of us in eternity, which is essentially what I think was Kirk's idea, which is really quite brilliant, actually. But if we live in a quantum mechanical universe, the mind is also quantum mechanical. So each person thinks cannot be determined a priori. So our minds are as different from one another as is our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
This will make for exciting and interesting interactions through eternity. Exploration becomes both physical and mental. So in other words, if you like, you can extend Kirk's thesis in that way.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting here is I spent this morning translating portions of the 23rd Psalm. And when you dig down to the root of the words, it's exactly what you've just been talking about, a love of discovery, of what really a nefesh, an individual soul, represents, and how God's plan is to enlighten us in such a way and empower us in such a way that we can go on an eternal journey of discovery with him.
Well, really, the mind becomes, if you like, another dimension. I hate to use the word again. Dimension.
Yes.
We can plan and foretell and the outcome of the plan. We can see out of the world of the imagination. I mean, this is not physical stuff. This is sort of maybe it is. It's hard to know. I mean, if you think about it, Yah spoke the universe into existence. So maybe there's another dimension that's just sort of hidden from us there.
Yes. I think it is both physical and material and also spiritual and energy-based and thought-based. You're right. I agree. It's all of those things. Yeah, there could be a very real experience mentally in the mind through imagination of what. I mean, wouldn't you want eternity to be more than just discovering what is, but also to be able to manage what imagine what might be?
Well, it's eternity without discovery would be hell.
It would be.
Because you'd just be repeating the same thing over and over again. Right. It'd be like Groundhog Day.
Right, of course. But wouldn't also the ability to imagine, to conceive, and to experiment based upon our imagination and our perceptions add a tremendous dimension to the enjoyment and to discovery in eternity?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's not just witnessing that which Yahweh has created, but us also being able to share what we can imagine and conceive.
Exactly. But not only individually, but collectively as well.
Correct.
Or without.
Correct. Correct. Yes. That's brilliant. No, I'm with you. And that's what the 23rd Psalm telling me as I studied it this morning.
You know, and when you sort of think about it like that, then you look around at all the little petty jealousies and terrible evil things that are done in the world, it really pales into insignificance.
Yes. Now, that being the case, let's still return to this war on economics, on personal cash, because I do want you to be able to conclude that you've done some research and it's germane to the times that we're living in.
All right. Well, it's fairly long and complicated, so can I just read it out? That'll probably be the best way.
Please. Please.
As Ron Paul said, the cashless society is the IRS's dream, total knowledge and control over the finances of every single American.
Mm-hmm.
Precursor to the mark is the war on cash, that is criminalizing cash and gold. Pushing credit cards onto everyone is a way to control and to steal. Cashless society is an attempt to drain the last wealth from the 99% to keep the corrupt system going. And without cash, gold, and the mark, you will not be able to purchase the necessities of life. So and this is taken from a website that I found. One way they are waging war on cash is to lower the threshold at which reporting a cash transaction is mandatory or at which paying out in cash is simply illegal. In just the last few years, Italy has made cash transactions over 1,000 euros illegal. Switzerland has proposed banning cash payments in excess of 100,000 francs. Russia banned cash transactions over $10,000. Spain banned cash transactions over 2,500 euros. Mexico made cash payments of more than 200,000 pesos illegal. Uruguay banned cash transactions over $5,000, and France made cash transactions over 1,000 euros illegal, down from the previous limit of 3,000 euros. In Australia, the use of cash is discouraged. Cash withdrawals have a reporting threshold of $10,000. So we have an economic system on the brink of disaster, an unprecedented debt, currency printed in the trillions, a massive bond and stock market bubble is with us. When all this unfolds, there will be a deep and prolonged depression leading to war, massive social unrest, starvation, people on the streets will usher in totalitarian governments, constitutions will be swept away. What is now possible is that technology will be used to fleece and control the populace. Digital money will be a starter with draconian penalties for those using the free market. And I call it free market, not black market. Digital money tracks all purchases, sales, movements of people and helps profile them. Debt is now unpayable worldwide. Precious metals are manipulated daily and their prices are suppressed illegally. But governments everywhere turn a blind eye to this. Allowing a free market in precious metals would expose bankrupt nations from the US to Europe. Gold holdings by central banks are totally secret, despite the laughable concept by Keynes that gold is a barbarous relic. Gold is being sold at suppressed prices to China, which has been encouraging its population to acquire gold. And no doubt this will be clawed back when the Chinese powers that be so desire. The West probably has very little gold. I suspect Fort Knox is completely empty. India is attempting to con gold from the Indian public as to rehypothecate the gold and then sell it to China to keep the Ponzi scheme going. Most people who think they have invested in gold have actually invested in paper called gold. Recently, five banks have been found guilty of LIBOR manipulation. That's UBS, Citi, JPM, Barclays, RBS. Huge fines have been paid, but no one went to jail. For them, this is just the cost of doing business in a criminal world and adds to the lack of trust between people seen in rampant crime and loss of morality. Interest rates are zero or negative and will remain there. Zerp and Zerp cause cash runs on banks, which prevents this from happening to keep the money in an electronic account where it can be stolen. Cash will be outlawed.
More after the break.